This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on May 10th, 2012. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
What we're going to do is Commissioner McGann's going to depart the room since he's recused from the first... Oh, right. He's going to leave the dais because he's. I forgot we were in an executive session where he does leave the room. And then we're going to discuss the Feinstein matter. And so, Madam Vice Chair, are there any late submitted documents for this advisory opinion request?
Just for this one. Okay. Yes. Well, for only this matter, I move that we waive the rules on the timely submission of agenda documents so that we may consider agenda documents 12-23A and 12-23B.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? The ayes have it. Thank you very much. And so the next matter on the agenda is draft advisory opinion 2012-7, Feinstein for Senate. I see we have Mr. Elias here with us today. I'm not sure if we have any questions for you. You're welcome to join the table, but I just don't know yet if we have questions. Ms. Selenkoff from the Office of General Counsel.
Thank you, Chair Hunter, and good morning, Commissioners. Agenda document 12-23, which was held over from the April 19th open meeting, and new agenda documents 12-23A, designated draft B, and 12-23B, which is designated draft C, respond to a request from the Feinstein for Senate Committee. The committee is the authorized committee of Senator Dianne Feinstein, and the committee asks if it may accept additional contributions from contributors whose funds were embezzled by the committee's treasurer without the additional contributions counting against the contributors' per election limits. The draft that was held over from the April 19th meeting and draft C both conclude that contributions from contributors whose funds were cashed or deposited into any bank account must be aggregated with any new contributions, but the committee may accept replacement contributions for those contributions whose funds were never deposited into any account or cashed. Draft B concludes that the committee may accept replacement contributions from contributors whose original contributions were not deposited into the committee's accounts, cashed, or otherwise used by the committee, but that the committee may not accept such replacement contributions from contributors whose funds were deposited into a committee account or cashed. We did not receive any comments on the request. We received one comment on the draft from the requester, and we received supplemental material from the requester following the last meeting at which this was considered. I'm available for any questions you may have.
Thank you very much. Any questions or comments? Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As I said at the last meeting, I think this is a very difficult question, and it's a very sympathetic request. It comes down to whether, as counsel said at the last meeting, he's not asking us to waive contribution limits. He's asking us at what point the contributions were accepted. And after thinking about this for a long time, I've decided that I think it's just sort of from a common sense and how the word reads in the dictionary perspective that it's hard to say that the committee accepted a contribution that it never actually got hold of in any meaningful sense, that never actually got into its accounts. But the ones that did go into its accounts, I think, yeah, they accepted those. They deposited them into their bank account. It's hard to say they didn't accept them. So that's not a terribly satisfactory answer, I think, for the requester, and I'm actually not even sure that it does you a whole lot of good. Because I don't know whether, it's not clear whether between now and the election when you'd have to be doing the additional fundraising, you'll be able to identify the checks that, or the I guess people don't write checks anymore, the credit card contributions that never made it into the accounts. But, you know, with that caveat that I'm not sure how much good it's going to do you, I'm prepared to support draft B.
Any other comments? Commissioner Walther?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you have any idea, not that it has to decide the case one way or the other, how many checks or how much money was diverted before it ever got into the Feinstein account?
Commissioner, I think, I'm not sure if this is on. Can you all hear me? Okay. As I said last time, I don't think we have our arms around that with any specificity. We continue to... I'm not sure we know that with any specificity. We continue to work through that ourselves with, and also with others to try to get our arms around that. But I think to the extent draft B more closely draws that line that the vice chair mentioned, I think it's I think it may offer some relief.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll continue. This is a tough one because the cleanest, I guess, way to say is if it never gets in any account, this is our letter from before. We're not confronted with the issue to the same degree, so we have to draw a line if we're going to draw it somewhere. If we don't stick to that. Policy, and I think I can support draft B. I think it's a rational way to try and do this. In either event, we have to try and figure out a rational approach toward interpreting some what we normally consider fairly commonly understood words like accept and that kind of thing. But I can support draft B. And I'm not saying the draft C isn't reasonable. I think it is, and I think it probably started off in that direction, and thought that in this particular case, and seeing what the rationale could be to provide some kind of relief here, I can support draft B. I would add a couple things. There are a couple of areas where I would like to make some suggestions. This has been coming at us all pretty fast and back and forth. And I think that I'd want to try and take a look at a couple of areas to maybe clarify my own mind. But in theory, I'm willing to support it.
Commissioner Bowerly.
Thank you. Obviously, this is a sympathetic situation. I'm going to be supporting draft C. A couple of the concerns I have about the approach in draft B, I think the footnotes so if we treat the contribution that was diverted into somewhere else as not being accepted by the committee, but as I understand it, would still need to be reported by the committee. I think I share Commissioner Weintraub's view that it seems like this might be a very difficult endeavor. But I'm not quite sure of the implications of saying that there's something that for example, if Ms. Durkee diverted funds from a Feinstein account into another candidate's account from which, so it was embezzled before it ever reached the Feinstein account, does that mean that it was accepted by the other committee, and would it be then a contribution to that other committee? I'm struggling with some of the implications of what drawing this line between receipt and acceptance really means in terms of other committees and other accounts that things might have gone into, either at the outset or at a later date. And obviously, draft B's distinction is on the first part of those, first type of those contributions. So I'm going to be supporting draft C, which says that if the contributions were never cashed or otherwise never left the contributor's control, then they could be resolicited, and that's consistent with what the commission has done in the past, I think. So, but I think that this is a difficult situation. But I think, unfortunately, from my perspective, we're bound by what the reg and the statute says and what we've done in the past. And I can't quite see myself, quite see clear to get to draft B.
Commissioner Peterson.
Thank you. Excuse me. Thank you, Madam Chair. I, too, am planning on supporting draft C. I do so reluctantly, not because I think that it reaches the wrong legal result. I think that the reasoning is correct in that draft. But I do so because I do wish that that we had better tools at our disposal to address a situation like this. This is a situation I think we all agree wasn't contemplated by Congress when the act was being drafted. You know, the relief that's being sought, permitting replacement contributions for funds that were embezzled, that's not something that the drafters of the act had in mind. Now, that fact alone is not dispositive, since there are many scenarios that we have to address in the advisory opinion context that deal with situations that weren't contemplated by the act. In fact, that's one of the main purposes of the advisory opinion process. I think, as I mentioned last time, the commission doesn't have broad authority to craft equitable remedies for in response to wrongdoing. In this case, it was committed by a committee's treasurer. Instead, we are constrained by what the act allows us to do and by what commission regulations permit us to do. And I think, like all of my colleagues, I've spent a lot of time going through the language of the act, of the commission regs, of the relevant advisory opinions, to see if there was, you know, a way that we could permit replacement contributions. And I've just really struggled to conclude that the funds that were embezzled by Kindy Durkee were not in fact received or accepted by the committee. Under the act, each committee is required to have a treasurer. Without one, you can't make expenditures, receive contributions, and in fact, every committee expenditure has to be authorized by the committee, by the treasurer. It's the one indispensable position within the structure of a committee. So almost by definition, a person who's appointed as a treasurer is authorized to receive contributions on the committee's behalf. So while Kindy Durkee certainly was acting outside the scope of her authority when she was stealing from the Feinstein Committee and when she was shifting money to other clients' accounts, it's difficult for me to conclude that she was similarly acting outside the scope of her authority when she actually was receiving and depositing the contributions that had been made out to the Feinstein Committee. The restatement on agency does contemplate scenarios where an agent or an employee is both acting inside and outside the scope of their authority, and under the restatement, acting outside the scope of one's agency in some instances doesn't necessarily nullify that agency for all purposes. And I think in this case, that's what happened, that certainly certain actions by Kindy Durkee were outside the scope of her agency, while others were within it. At this point, I just want to mention that I appreciate the additional comments and the efforts made by Requester's Counsel to find a way to figure out a way that we could potentially circumscribe boundaries that would keep this from going too far. Last time, one of the concerns I had was about a limiting principle, and the Requester's Counsel proposed three limiting principles to be applied to cases where committees victimized by embezzlement seek to obtain replacement contributions, and those were a criminal conviction or a guilty plea or some finding of guilt or liability, an intent to defraud that was in place before contributions received, and that replacement contributions could only be sought for the current election cycle. And as I thought over these, while there's no doubt that these would narrow the circumstances under which replacement contributions would be able to be obtained in embezzlement scenarios, I was concerned that I wasn't sure whether or not they really are grounded in the act or that they would necessarily be equitable. To me, when the intent to defraud a committee isn't necessarily if it happens at the time when money arrives, excuse me, or happens after money arrives, in either case, a committee is being victimized by embezzlement in either instance. And so I'm not sure that I would have felt comfortable drawing a line in that at that point. And also, other than administrative convenience, I'm not sure why we would want to, if we were going to go down the road to allow replacement contributions, why we would want to limit it just to the current election cycle. And also, I think that this was something that was brought up last time, is from an evidentiary perspective, if we were to go down that road, it would be difficult for the commission to really ascertain how much a committee would be able to recoup via replacement contributions, especially if the extent of the embezzlement depends, at least in some part, on the treasurer's subjective intent. And also, just from a very practical perspective, if we were to use these limiting principles, I think that they would disadvantage some candidates more than others. For example, House candidates are subject to only a two-year election cycle, and so the likelihood excuse me, the likelihood of discovering an embezzlement scenario and obtaining a conviction or a guilty plea all within an election cycle would be very unlikely. Senate candidates with their six-year election cycles, there would be a greater chance of that happening. So, again, it's just not clear to me how workable and fair these limiting principles would work. So, to my mind, it's kind of an all-or-nothing scenario. We either are all in or we're all out. And maybe I'm looking at that in too much black and white, but that's where I've arrived. If we were to throw open the door to all committees who have been victimized by embezzlement to obtain replacement contributions, then I really do fear that we would be opening Pandora's box, that we would be forced to do a lot of ad hoc line drawing, and we'd be governing an area with not a lot of guidance from the Act, that we would in a sense be creating policies out of whole cloth rather than just doing what we normally do, which is fleshing out the statutory scheme. So it's for these reasons that, again, I reluctantly will be plan to support draft C, and later on in this meeting we're going to be talking about legislative recommendations. Obviously, I think it would be too late to tag this on as something that Congress ought to consider, but I do think, you know, on a very gut level, I think we all here on this on the dais have really been struggling with this issue and want to find some way to make it work, but again are constrained by what the Act allows us to do and by what our regulations permit us to do. And so that's the situation in which we find ourselves, and again, under those circumstances, I'm planning on voting for draft C.
Well put, Commissioner Peterson, and you took a lot of the words right out of my mouth. I agree with everything you said, and also with what Commissioner Bowerly said, and I too plan to support draft C. Any other comments, questions? So I think the plan here is we're going to vote on those drafts, and my understanding is that the deadline for this, and thank you for your comments that you submitted, and also for extending the deadline to Monday, if that's correct, Monday, May 14th.
She tells me yes.
The lady in the red glasses. Okay, so Monday, May 14th, which gives us a little bit of time to, because obviously there's some parts of this we'll be able to answer with the requisite amount of votes. So we'll put together a consensus draft and circulate it by tally vote, and it'll be done by Monday, May 14th. Are there any motions? Madam Vice Chair?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to note that I respect my colleagues for who've come to different conclusions. I think we have all agreed that it's a difficult situation, and I've been thinking about how we can sort of shake up the political class to try and make sure everybody is really aware of the scope of this problem. It's so troubling. I almost feel like we need to have a flashing light across our website saying X millions of dollars have been embezzled from political committees this year. Do you know where your money is? These old commercials we used to hear in, when I was growing up. It's 10 o'clock. Do you know where your children is? Do you know where your children are? It's really, the scope of this is frightening. But having said that, I move approval of Draft B, which is Agenda Document 12-23A, along with technical and conforming amendments, because we did catch a couple of typos.
All those in favor signify by saying aye. Oh, Commissioner Lawhead.
I'll support Draft B, but I did want to make a couple of suggestions with respect to the content, minor ones. So I certainly support the result and 99% of the
But we're,
draft,
we're voting so. On the draft right now, so we're not going to be rewriting it afterwards. Is there something you wanted to?
Well, I thought the, we were going to try and maybe finish it off on a tally vote, you know, what we support or not.
We're so you're not, he's not, I don't, you're not prepared to vote right now on draft B. Maybe you'll not vote? Or
I prefer not to, but if there's only one vote and that's all I get, I'd vote for it.
Well, I think we're going to have two.
I'll support it.
Okay.
Let's move it.
Okay. You'll get another chance to vote on the consensus draft. All those in favor for draft B, which is a document number 12-23A, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. The motion fails 2-3. Are there any other motions? Commissioner Peterson.
Thank you, Matt. Excuse me. Thank you, Madam Chair. I move excuse me. I move approval of agenda document number 12-23-B, otherwise known as draft C.
All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed?
No.
The motion fails 3-2. Mr. Elias, do you have any questions or technical questions about what we're going to do next? Or
I do not.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We're going to take a brief recess at this time to get Mr. Professor Zolt on the line for the next draft advisory opinion, which is Repledge 2012-8.